the music going because I've got to...
Go ahead.
Oh, what time is it?
8 o'clock. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us for 30 minutes this evening Michael Perutka, who is the presidential candidate of the Constitution Party. Mr. Perutka, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Dr. Stan, it is great to be with you again. Thanks for your hospitality.
Well, it's good to have you. And I just want our listeners to get to hear you. We're certainly not hearing much at all about you. You're mentioned by the controlled media. They keep talking about Ralph Nader, who's going to be on the ballots in perhaps, what, 7 or 8 states. But you are going to be on, what, about 40 states?
We're looking at 41 right now, Dr. Stan. And listen, don't be discouraged. I'll tell you what. The major media will filter us out because our message is not harmonious with theirs. Let me say that. But I tell you, Dr. Stan, I was just out in last week. I was in Nevada and Utah and California, and many, many people have told me that they heard me on your broadcasts. And I was on with Mr. Joe Farah today on the WorldNet Daily Radio, and I was on in Texas today as well. So you know, we're just knocking on all the doors we can, and we are not about to get discouraged here. We've been invited to some third party debates at Cornell University and some others, and we're going to take all the opportunities we can to get in front of the American people and tell them the truth about God, family, and the Republic. And we need to do that. We need to get back to honoring God, defending the family, and restoring the Republic.
Well, I think that what people don't really realize is you don't have to get a majority of the vote. If you could get 34 or 35% of the vote and enough for the delegates, why, you could win. Because, of course, with a three-way race, and, of course, Nader siphoning votes off from the Democratic candidate, why, you know, you do not need a majority in a situation such as this. And you're the only candidate who really opposes the war. I mean, certainly John Kerry's going to continue the war on. George Bush is going to continue the war, keep our troops over there. You're the only. How do you feel about the war, and what would happen if we did pull out of there?
Well, Dr. Stan, you're right that both major parties are committed to the war effort because they're committed really to what the war effort is really all about, and that is the New World Order. This is a war for empire. This is a war to extend our military reach across the world, and in this case in the Middle East. And this war for empire is a very dangerous thing. It will draft your sons and your daughters, and they're planning to do that. Both the major parties are planning to do that. But, you know, the threshold question about the war is it constitutional? Did we declare war in Iraq? And, of course, we did not. This is not a constitutional, that is to say, a legal, lawful act on the part of the United States government. We complain about rogue nations across the globe, but this is an act of lawlessness on the part of Americans. Now, people get mad at me sometimes when I say that because they say there's kind of a knee-jerk nationalism out there. I'm not defending Saddam Hussein or anybody else, but it's not our job to be policemen of the world, and it's not our job to go plant democracy elsewhere either, because of course we're not a democracy. I'm sure your listeners realize that, but many people across America keep getting fed this line that we're a democracy, and that which is really another word for a socialist party A and party B keep promoting this democracy idea, and that we're self-consciously and purposely not a democracy. But Dr. Stan, I believe that our troops could be much better used in defending the invasion that's occurring from our southern border. And if I were elected president, I would safely and swiftly withdraw from Iraq. And if necessary, I'd use every one of those 140,000 troops to defend to do the real job that we're supposed to do, and that's to defend our borders.
Well, I think that there are an awful lot of Americans who would agree with that totally, and I certainly would. Well, tell us how you look upon our economy, because we seem to be, they keep telling us that we're having this great economic recovery, and yet we seem to find that more and more people are losing their jobs, and many of the people who have jobs, they're really not very good paying jobs. Why aren't we doing better economically here in the United States?
Well, to understand the policies that both Republicans and Democratic leadership are committed to the same policy again, which is to, a New World Order program that seeks to diminish the standard of living, to lower the standard of living in America, which makes it easier for America to be subsumed into a internationalist government, into a one world government. That's really the plan, and that's why we have these quote unquote free trade policies. That's what NAFTA and GATT and that's what the WTO is all about. You know, Dr. Stan, since I've talked to you last, a couple of weeks back, there was a bill passed it was up for passage in Congress to conform our tax laws to a ruling of the New World Order. Now, if you're an American citizen who has a modicum of understanding of the Constitution and constitutional government, then that should make the back of your head blow off. I mean, you've got to react to that if you have. But the trouble is, many Americans don't have any idea that that's what's going on, or that there's anything wrong with that. And yet, that is a denial of American sovereignty. These internationalist foreign bureaucrats who make these rulings for NAFTA, for example, or for the WTO, these people are not accountable to the United States Senate or House of Representatives, and certainly not to the American people. This is a New World Order regime.
Well, I'm reading a book now, and it's saying, you know, we can't withdraw simply to our borders. Why, if we withdrew to our borders and became isolationist, why, it would be the end of globalism and this effort to raise living standards throughout the world. How would you respond to that?
Well, the effort of globalism is not to raise living standards around the world. It's to lower our living standards to the third world status. That's what it's all about. There's not any desire on the part of anyone to raise living standards, and of course, and there's no track record that's ever been done by any of this New World Order enterprise.
All right. Well, now, of course, one of the things that really I think many parents are concerned about is this idea of drafting their children and sending them overseas for in the military. And, of course, the Bush administration insists that they have no intention of doing that. They keep insisting and insisting, and they keep talking about it and talking about it. Do you think that this is simply a sort of a preparation for the draft?
Yes, I do. I do. I believe a draft is coming, and I believe that the plans are being laid for that, and I believe that that draft, at least in the first go round, may not include your daughters, but at some point it will. We are in at last count, and I'm not sure this is a totally accurate number, but maybe we have military in 151 or 152 countries across the globe, and yet again, There's this cognitive dissonance. We have that situation going on, and yet we can't protect our own borders. We have waves of illegal immigrants coming in our borders, and what our president does, and I heard a high level, just about 2 weeks ago, I was at a meeting, and I heard a high level high level official, in the Homeland Security Department say that President Bush's amnesty idea, of course he didn't call it amnesty, but that's exactly what it is, but that this amnesty proposal is a pragmatic solution to a serious problem. And, you know, I wish what they'd come up with instead of pragmatic solutions are principled solutions, because as Pat Buchanan says, to call this illegal illegal immigrants, just all of a sudden we're going to call them legal because it's easier and more convenient that way. We'll just declare them to be legal. this is really what he called a massive reward for illegality. And look, I had the pleasure of saying the other day, Dr. Stan, that the Constitution Party is the only party that considers illegal immigration to be illegal. we're the only ones to take that stand, so far as I know. So protecting our borders and eliminating illegal immigration and getting back to a sane level of legal immigration is important to you, then I ask you to consider voting for the Constitution Party and for Michael Anthony Perucca.
All right. Well, now let's talk a little bit about your policies on education, because I think most people know that our education system is really not doing a very good job. The average is graduate from our colleges certainly doesn't compare with the graduates, say, from Indian colleges, universities where they're really stressing excellence. Here, of course, you have to go ahead and get a way advanced degree before you even begin to hold a torch to the people from other countries. In fact, the students that can't get into the best colleges over in India come over here and go to MIT or go to our best colleges because they can't get into the colleges in India that have much higher standards. So what should we be doing with our educational system? Can the federal government do to improve the level of education here in the United States?
They could get out of it. the threshold question, Dr. Stan, is do we have any authority to be in the education field at all? And, of course, the federal government has no role. Again, Article 1, Section 8, I must sound like a broken record.
No, you don't.
Article 1, Section 8 lays out the 18 things that the Congress has the right to tax and spend your money on. The authority had to. It doesn't matter whether they're good ideas or bad ideas. The threshold question is the authority there? Our Constitution and the flow of power, the way it's designed, is very, very specific. We're a government of limited, enumerated powers. The Tenth Amendment kind of puts an exclamation point on that, if you will, says if the power is not listed there, not specifically delegated to the central government, then it's reserved to the states and the people, respectively. And education is nowhere in there. Now, having said that, so there's no right of Congress to tax and or spend any money on education. There should not be a Department of Education, and there wouldn't be one if we were in authority. If in fact we won this election and under a Perucca administration, there would be no Department of Education, and there would be no federal spending on education, not because it works or doesn't work, and you and I know it doesn't work, but it's not authorized. So having said that, I will then say it doesn't work. It is a failure, but it's in a sense designed to be a failure, Dr. Stan, because once again, like we talked about with the shipping of jobs overseas, and the invasion of the borders. What we have in power in America are people who are not committed to America. We have people, and that's hard to say, it's hard to hear, but we have to face it. We have both Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B. They're internationalist socialists, and they are dedicated to a new world order, an international agenda. They're not trying to get excellence in American education. What they're trying to do is, again, lower the standards in America so that we are an easier target for takeover by a globalist elite.
Well, I certainly agree with what you're saying, and I share your concern. What do you see happening in the Middle East if we don't pull out of there, if we leave our troops there? And of course, they're talking now about the danger of Iran and the fact that Al-Qaeda was working with Iran, and Iran is developing nuclear weapons. And what's going to happen if we continue our current course in the Middle East?
Well, it'll be Iran, it'll be Syria, it'll be Saudi Arabia, it'll be, The war drums are, as you say, are being beaten already. Only thing lacking is the proper pretext, just like the war in Iraq was pre-planned, and it was. I believe there's plenty of evidence, Dr. Stan, that the desire to invade Iraq was a plan that was on the shelf, waiting for a pretext. 9/11 was the pretext by which. They believe that they could get it done, and invasions of other countries in the Middle East are in the plan, They're just waiting for the proper pretext to move forward.
Well, there are some people who can sort of justify what's happened, saying, look, we have to have oil. We're a highly industrialized society, and if we don't have oil, we don't have energy. If we don't have energy, the whole infrastructure of America collapses. So maybe we can justify what's happened by going over to the Middle East so we can control the oil supplies there. How would you respond to that?
Well, by that same justification that you have something we want, we don't like who you are, we're going to just enforce our will on you. That is the same justification that Muhammad Atta might have used to just blow up the World Trade Center. I mean, you've just given him the authority to do what he did, and the terrorists that did it. So that doesn't justify that kind of proposal. And we have plenty of oil reserves and energy reserves in this country if we, in fact, stop this, if we get rid of the unconstitutional Environmental Protection Agency and go ahead and take dominion, as we are have a duty to do, over the resources of the United States of America.
And I think that is the real thing. There's really no shortage of oil, but the environmentalists have kept us from developing our natural energy by one sort or another all across America. And we're never going to solve the problem until we do away with the Environmental Protection Agency. If you were the president, what would you do with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency?
I would dismantle it again. And it's not even a question. We can argue about the fact that the Environmental Protection Agency actually has caused the deaths of firefighters in wildfires out there in, I believe, in California, where they didn't rescue them because they didn't have the authority to go dig to take water. The helicopters couldn't get water out of a certain body of water because there was Environmental Protection Agency rule against it. So four firefighters died. I mean, we could argue and we could talk about the fact that these are dangerous. They're not just economically dangerous. They are dangerous to people's lives. But yet, once again, we come back to this. The real question is, are they authorized? And this kind of activity on the part of the federal government is not authorized. There is no authority for an Environmental Protection Agency. And we would dismantle, and we wouldn't spend one more dime on it if Peruca was president.
Well, I guess the Bush administration has announced with a great deal of pride that the federal deficit this year, and I've forgotten whether it was $438 or $468 billion, we thought it was going to be $530 billion. Now it's only $438 or $468 billion.
So I feel a lot better, don't you?
So, you know, can any country continue to run up deficits like we're running up and survive?
No, they can't. What we're doing now, because the federal government can print money, or print what they call money, their Federal Reserve notes and their debt instruments from the second they're created, because they can do that, they're able to pass this on, pass the buck on to future generations. So what we have is a situation where they've already taken all of our productivity, and now they're taking money from your children and from your grandchildren by passing on this debt to future generations. So no, it can't go on forever. My friend Franklin Sanders says they only have two weapons in their arsenal. One is inflation, and the other is baloney. so all they can do is keep printing more money, and of course taxing us to incredible limits. I mean, I don't know when what do they call it? Tax Freedom Day is sometime in July now. By the time you're finished paying off taxes and you can actually work for yourself. And Dr. Stan, if that's not a definition of slavery, the abdication or the stealing of another man's productivity, then I don't know what is.
In other words, what you're saying is that the government is taking our income by force and utilizing it for the things they want to, just like the feudal lord of old certainly kept the serf enslaved who had to pay to till the land. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Michael Peruca, and he's only going to be able to work with us for 30 minutes, so we're going to hold back on calls for the time being. But I think maybe when we get back, we'll have time for one or two calls. So if you'd like to talk to Michael, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464. 1-888-24-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Michael Perutka from the Constitution Party. And Michael, as you talk to people out across the land, and I know you're talking to a lot of them, what is the thing that you find is primarily on their mind? What are the three or four major issues that you see that people are concerned about?
Well, Dr. Stan, it varies a little bit from place to place in the country. I just was in both Nevada and Utah, and in both those places, one of the issues that is on people's minds are the stealing and the denigration of property rights on the part of people. The Bureau of Land Management and other unconstitutional federal programs are stealing the property of Americans in just huge ways. I mean, I don't know if you realize, but in the state of Nevada, I believe 89% of the land in Nevada is federally controlled, either owned or controlled. And you know, I heard a presentation out there at the Freedom 21 conference where a government bureaucrat was explaining how this or that Bureau of Land Management program is the one that this is how it's going to go, and this is how we're going to, and the whole thing is unconstitutional. I mean, it's just incredible to listen to these presentations. There is no place in the Constitution that allows the government to own land that way. There is a provision that allows them to own the District of Columbia and other, I think it's forts, arsenals, magazines, dockyards, and needful buildings, and that's it. There's no such thing as a federal forest, etc. So that's one issue in California where I spoke. People are very, very concerned about illegal immigration. They're being overrun. These poor folks are in the trenches fighting against illegal immigration. In other parts of the country, there are some other issues. People are very concerned about incredible federal spending. But the thing that brings it all together, Dr. Stan, is people really are thankful. And it's not me. It's not about me. I'm just somebody who's trying to do my duty. But people are very thankful that there is a constitutional choice all over. In Utah, in Nevada, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, people have approached me and said, "Thank you for running because there is someone for whom I can vote and have a clear conscience." And Dr. Stan, that's what we stand for: God, family, and the Republic. We need to return to an American understanding of law and government. There is a God; rights come from Him; they don't come from the government. And the purpose of government is to protect and secure and defend those rights, not to attack them and steal the rights from the people. So we've got to return to constitutional government because where we're heading is chaos and oppression, and the airport experience isn't getting any better, I'll tell you that. I know you thought TSA stood for 1,000 standing around, but it's a terrible situation now where instead of protecting our borders, we're harassing our own people. The Patriot Act is a violation of the Fourth Amendment and others, and it's a terrible travesty what's happening in America because we've moved away from our American principles, and the evidence of it plays out in all these different ways. But what we need to do is go back to an American view, not a socialist, an internationalist socialist view that we're following now.
All right, I certainly agree with you. Well, we're going to have to wait just a moment and bring the rest of our stations back together. And I think when we do, we have Ray calling from Santa Cruz. We'll be with him in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, talking to Michael Perutka, who is the candidate for president from the Constitution Party. He will be on the ballot in 41 states, and isn't it interesting that ABC, CBS, and NBC, most of the major media, are not giving him a lot of coverage. He has had a little, you were on CNN, one of the two of the others, weren't you?
Yes, I've been on C-SPAN a few times, and Fox News has given me a little bit of coverage, and I was on the WorldNet Daily radio station today, and Joseph Farah's program, and you know, I do just I'm doing what I can, Dr. Stan.
I think you're doing a great job, Mike. It's a tremendous sacrifice for you to be doing what you're doing and having to leave your home and leave your income and just be doing, just trying to reach people across America. Well, why don't we tell people how they can get in touch with your organization, with you, if they'd like to help, if they'd like to contribute, because money is the mother's milk of politics. So I'm sure you would not be at all adverse to financial contributions.
No, of course, of course. We would appreciate anybody's help who's willing and able to do that. You can go to our website at PERROUTKA2004. That's Perutka 2004. Let me spell that again. PERROUTKA2004.com. You can contribute that way. You can get information. You can get bumper stickers, yard signs, brochures. Please, if you care about constitutional government, please get involved and do what you can. You can get a DVD where you can host an evening. I'll come to your house. Of course, I'll be on a DVD. But I'll come to your house or your church or your town hall. Get the DVD. Get the instructions on how to run a evening with Michael Perutka, and you can do it at home, and you can do it even in wonderful places like Monterey, California, all these wonderful places you can do this.
Of course,
that's a way that you can help.
All right. Now, then they would go to your website, and there'd be a telephone number there or an email or something that they would allow them to get the DVD?
Sure. Yes, there is. They could get it from the website, or they could call us at 877-627-2004.
One more time.
Sure. 877-627-2004.
All right. That's 877-627-2004. Well, we've got, of course, Ray on the line here. I don't know if they're going to have to. Well, let's see. Ray, is there a quick question? We're almost out of time.
Well, I just wanted to know if Michael agrees that Bush is assaulting the environment, that he's done numerous things to help, really, promoting to destroy the environment. They took 200 millions of acres of forests in the western region. They took them out of from underneath the protection of the federal government, and God knows, you know.
No, you mean we need the federal government to protect the forests?
Well, we need somebody to protect them because the loggers are going to go in there and kill off the sequoias and the groves and.
So you well, okay, fine. Let's just ask Mr. Perutka, how do you feel about the federal government controlling a vast tracts of land and letting them? Of course, we see what they're doing. Are they letting them sit there and burn? And are they doing nothing even to stop many of these wildfires? How do you feel about the federal government being involved?
Well, there's plenty of examples, Ray, of how federal lands are when any kind of fire or disaster occurs. Federal lands take the brunt of it. Because private lands have taken dominion over them and have prepared them so that the fire doesn't devastate them. Fire devastates federal lands because they have been left to waste. But that's not even really the issue. The issue is there any authority for the federal government to own lands or to control lands or to take or to try to protect lands, and the fact is there is none.
All right, fine, Jeff Ray, we're just about out of time.
Okay,
if you want to hang on the line or you want to call back, I'll talk to you right after the next break, because we're going to have to get Mr. Perutka go. But, Mike, what are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening? Because we've only got about a minute and a half before we let you turn into a pumpkin.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Dr. Shane. It's an honor to be with you, and I'm always grateful for the opportunity to talk to you. And you are well-loved all over the country. I've talked to people all over that have heard us and heard you talk and heard us on your show. I would tell people, look, please don't waste your vote. If people always ask me about a wasted vote. Please don't waste your vote on those who have demonstrated to you their lack of fidelity to the Constitution. Both major parties, both Mr. Kerry and Mr. Bush, have demonstrated and promised, even in Mr. Kerry's acceptance speech at his convention recently, he said he was for constitutional government and restoring integrity of the White House, and then he talks about after-school programs and drug prescription programs, all things that are unconstitutional. They do not have a concept of following the rule of law and the Constitution. Please don't waste your vote on people like that. Vote for Michael Perutka, the Constitution Party, PERROUTKA2004. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. Thanks so very much. The best of luck to you, and hope you'll be able to get a chance to talk to you once more before the election there in November.
Great. Thanks.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we're going to have a half an hour now before we have our next guest, so we'll welcome your calls and right here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Ray was talking about how we just couldn't get those loggers going in to the land. Oh, my goodness, it would be just terrible. They were going to cut down the sequoias, you know, and then not going to be any sequoias left. Well, we have, you know, first of all, no authority for the federal government to tie up almost half the land in the western United States. They own almost 90% of the land in Alaska. And the land that they control is really tragically being allowed to deteriorate. They're not cleaning up the forests. The forests are burning. But that's really what these people want. They really want it to do it nature's way, and I think man can improve on nature's way. I believe selective logging is a very intelligent way to go, because if you know anything at all about logging, you know that when you have too heavy growth, number one, while you don't get the sun in, you don't get the trees to grow, and you do far better, and you get much healthier forests by doing selective and staged logging within the forest. And then, of course, the forester, if he owns the land himself, is going to look after that land far better than the federal government does. Whenever the government owns something, nobody really owns it, and it's really not well taken care of. When a private corporation owns something, why, it is taken care of because they have a vested financial interest in that. Now, there's no place in California that they're doing clear-cutting anymore. They used to do clear-cutting, and there was a certain advantage to that after they did clear-cutting. Why, then, of course, the new forest would begin to come back again. You would go ahead and replant your forest because you were looking for harvesting 20 or 30 years in the future. But that has been done away with, and I'm not going to discuss whether this was good or bad, but I'm telling you that this is not a problem, that they are not doing clear-cutting anywhere in California, and anywhere who tells you that they are, in fact, I don't know any place in the country they're doing clear-cutting. I know that they're doing this up in Canada, but they're doing it on government land and being encouraged to do it actually by the government, because the government has really no interest in much of anything other than keeping the economy going. The government has no interest in anything other than getting the politicians reelected and, of course, having the people who work for the government continue to get their large salaries. Unfortunately, government, by its very essence, is force, and George Washington had said so well, government is not eloquence, government is not persuasion, government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant, but a fearful master. And I think you only need to look and see what's happened to the Indians who've been dependent upon government to see what happens. Well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. Hi, and let me just put our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, in the last call, it's refreshing. At the risk of putting words into his mouth, it's refreshing to hear from someone that doesn't feel they're paying high enough federal taxes.
Well, now, he didn't really say that. He just felt that that it was a terrible thing to take these or to open up any of the forest to logging, because if you let the loggers into the forest, they were going to destroy them. But they're certainly not going to allow clear cutting. And I will tell you that the forests that are under the loggers' control are a lot better taken care of than that are the federal government control. The federal government doesn't want any roads in there. They don't want anybody in there, but the elite, of course, the elite can go in. And unfortunately, what happens if you don't clear out the underbrush, if you don't selectively take down some of those trees, why, they become just a tinderbox. And unfortunately, this is what's happened time and time again. And then you have no means of getting your fire suppression crews in, because there are no roads there. They let the roads go back, and of course the fire just burns and burns and burns literally hundreds of thousands of acres and kills all the animals. And you have to understand that there really is a mentality that says that's good. That is far better than cutting down the wood and let human beings use it, because there are too many human beings in the world. The humans are the real blight on society. There really are people with a different worldview that hate humanity, and they think we'd be far better off if we could simply kill off the majority of the world's population and get back to the way it was before the evil white man came to America.
Well, why should we indulge the fatal conceit that American collectivism is in environmental matters is somehow going to be that much better than the Eastern European model where all those environmental disasters exist?
Well, I tell you what, the most heavily contaminated areas in the United States today are our government sites, Hanford and Rocky Flats. I guess those two sites, I mean, it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars to clean them up. They're government waste sites.
Yeah, and I really love Michael Perutka, but I don't know why he's so insisted on calling those folks illegal aliens, because I was thinking of robbing a bank, and I'd like to have it known as an undocumented withdrawal.
All right, fine. Did you have any comments to make, Roger?
Your signal's booming in here on 7.315 megahertz worldwide.
Good.
I don't know if it'll do that good overall, but I wanted to give a reference to your previous 2 hours of the late afternoon, evening. That would be starting 6 p.m. Eastern on 9.430 for
right.
2 hours.
Right.
And you're doing well there as well. I didn't know if you were going to jump to this frequency for that time as well, but no, you're still here on, that is just the last 2 hours, you are here on 7.315.
Well, we basically these new frequencies that we're on. Before, I think there were either 50 or maybe at the most 100,000. These are 250,000 watt stations. Tremendous outreach, tremendous coverage, and we have the opportunity to really reach the world. So, of course, let me put a plug in for those of you out there listening. If you believe in what we're doing, you believe we need to reach not only the United States with a better signal, but the rest of the world, and let them understand that there really are dark spiritual forces that are energizing many of the people who are embracing this idea of world government. This idea of world government has been the concept of the mystery religions and the secret societies for thousands of years. But it's coming to a culmination at this time in history on our watch. And we have to point out that there really is evil in the world. There really is a devil or Satan, or call him what you will, Lucifer. And his goal is to replace God and to create a world government that he will rule. And if you read the writings of the occultists, which I do, they will tell you that the goal, the highest echelon, the highest hope of mankind is this world government. And those people who worship Lucifer look to the world government, the United Nations, which incidentally is backed by the leaders of both of our political parties, as the hope of all mankind. And I would simply point out that's not the hope of all mankind, because Lucifer wants to destroy humanity. And you read the writings of the people who embrace population control, they'll tell you they want to kill off 2 billion people, 4 billion people, almost 6 billion people. There are people like David Foreman who wants to only have 100 million people in the world. Right now we have about 6,300,000,000 people. He wants only to have 100 million people left. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And there really are people with no human compassion at all who have an entirely different view of the world, and they think that they are smart enough to run the world and they should have the power to eliminate everybody else. Those of you who have never heard or seen the article in UNESCO magazine, November of 1991, we have it, where Jacques Cousteau is interviewed and talks about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. That is what Jacques Cousteau said, and the fact you've never heard about that from Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Rush Limbaugh, or Bill O'Reilly simply is a reflection of the fact that they are simply the finest conservatives and liberals that money could buy. They're not going to tell you what this is really all about. It is a satanic conspiracy to rule the world. Go ahead, Roger. And incidentally, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Roger, what did you think of what Michael Perutka had to say? Did you agree with him or disagree?
Oh, he's always excellent. Always excellent. God bless Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much, Roger. And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we don't have anything, of course, prepared, but I think that it was a fascinating opportunity to hear Mr. Perutka. He's given up a tremendous amount personally to run for the presidency and get his message out. And he only has to get 35% of the vote, or even 34% of the vote, and he could win the election. People say, well, why throw your vote away on a third-party candidate? Well, I'll tell you what, a third-party candidate can win. In fact, if we're going to be interviewing tomorrow afternoon, Mr. Tony Bennett from England, and they run the Independence Party, I think it is, anyway, they're against the European Union, and actually they completely upset the election. They came in third in the election over in Europe. They now have 12 of their people who hate this idea of the European Union on the European Parliament. And they are having a tremendous impact in England, where more and more people are realizing that this idea of joining the European Union is just simply a step in the destruction of British sovereignty and the destruction of British freedom, just as our joining this Western Hemisphere common trading partnership is simply the first step along the way to tearing down the trade barriers, and then having a common currency, and then having a common government, and then merging us into this one world demonic order that is being planned for us. And it's all laid out. These people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to realize that the leaders of Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B, or whether I refer to them as Socialist Party R and Socialist Party D, they're all dedicated to this, exactly this goal. They have a different dream, and they would agree with Arthur Schlesinger, who, writing in the Wall Street Journal, and any of you would like to see the article, we'll send you a copy of it. It's entitled, this was October of 1993. The article was Bye-Bye Woodrow, the idea of giving up the Wilsonian dream of a world government. And he said, let's not kid ourselves that we can have a new world order without paying for it in blood as well as with money. Oh, maybe it's too expensive. Maybe it'll be too difficult. Maybe the price is too high to go ahead and have this new world order. But remember, if we forego it, why, we are giving up that dream. And remember those words that Winston Churchill called the most noble ever written, and that Harry Truman carried in his wallet all of his life. And then he quoted from the poem Locksley Hall by Alfred Lord Tennyson. For I dipped into the future far as any eye could see, saw a vision of the world and all the wonders that would be, heard the heavens filled with shouting and there rained a ghastly dew of the nation's airy navies grappling in the central blue, till the war drums throbbed no longer and the battle flags were furled in the Parliament of Man, the Federation of the World. And that's what it's really all about. You'll find that Edward Bellamy's quoting those words in the early 1880s in his book Looking Backwards. And Carnegie in his book Triumphant Democracy is quoting those words in 1891 or 1892. And you'll find the Masons quoting these words. You'll find, of course, Schlesinger. Everybody understands what this is about. The elite all understand. They just don't want the common folks to know what it's really all about. They have a plan. And that is to a world ruled by a ruling elite, carrying out the age-old plan, the late attempted by Nimrod, certainly advocated by Plato in his book, The Republic, where, of course, you would have the ruling oligarchy, the so-called just man who would rule the world. Of course, Plato didn't tell you that was to be the Antichrist or the representative Satan. And then a massive military that would spy on everybody and control everybody. And then, of course, everybody else would be enslaved. And there would be, of course, no families. The children would belong to the state just as they do today. That's why they want to get your children into preschool so they can get their hands on them. When you see these ads on the paper or on television about success by six, what's this really all about? Why, they want to get your child, because they know if you continue controlling that child till they're 5 or 6 years old, why, you're going to give those child ideas about God and about loyalty and about patriotism. And that, of course, is madness. That is a form of insanity. Of course, they want to get their hands on that child ahead. They want to succeed by six in molding their minds so that they'll go along with this new world order. And I like the gentleman who called in earlier saying, oh my goodness, you don't want those terrible loggers to get their hands on the logs in those federal forests. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to have homes for the people. Where's the lumber going to come from if we don't cut it in our forests? Why, we're getting it from overseas. And we're going to just let our forests here burn and be destroyed. And the animals destroyed, but isn't that good? No, it's all insanity. We live in a world gone mad. There are only a few of us who are sane. And because the whole idea of allowing the federal government to control the forests is totally ridiculous. What we need to do, of course, is unharness the free enterprise system. And I will tell you that I take far better care of my garden than if it were simply belonged to the government. And you look around in your community, very often you'll find many of the areas that are maintained by the local government, there are weeds every place. Why? Because it doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to everybody, and nobody's really in charge. Well, let's go to Nathan calling. Hi, Nathan. I have a question or comment.
Hi, good evening, Doctor. You know, it was before I get to my question, I just remembered something as you were talking. It wasn't but too long ago that the New York Times reported the fact that the Bilderbergers endorsed the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic side.
In other words, they picked John Kerry, and then John Edwards, and then it was about 3 weeks after that when John Kerry just accidentally picked the same man the Bilderbergers had picked.
Well, Edwards spoke before the Bilderbergers. He got an applause, and then suddenly Senator Kerry picked him as his running mate. Now, I like Edwards, but I don't like the idea that a candidate for elected office in the United States would somehow have to be approved by foreign royalty.
I mean, why do you like Edwards? I mean, what is there about
him? Well,
it?
I mean, personally, I mean, a lot of what he says about corporate greed and all the rest of it, but I don't like the idea that and I'm not going to vote for him, in large part because of the idea that I don't like the notion that foreign royalty would be essentially selecting our presidential candidates.
But that's the way it always is in reality.
Well,
that
wasn't the way it was in the day of George Washington.
Oh, no,
George Washington was not selected by foreign royalty.
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay.
But I'm talking in recent years.
Well, my question for presidential candidate Peruca, and I'm sorry I didn't get to hear the debate or the interviewer, I would have asked him myself, but maybe you can sort of answer for him based on he has a friend of his. Does he believe firmly and unequivocally that the answer to the problems of this country lie in divine law?
Well, I think that he believes that our freedoms come from God, as the Declaration of Independence says, and I think that he believes that there is a law higher than the laws of men. And I think that's what our founding fathers believed in. He wants to return to the Constitution, limit the power of government, and acknowledge that there is a God. Now, you may have a different concept of what that God be that I would be. And I don't think he's going to insist that you believe in God as he believes. But we would agree that there is a law higher than man's law, and that's God's law. And it's pretty well spelled out in the Bible.
Okay, well, I mean, particularly would he say that the principles in, I'll use the term Old Testament, I don't really like it, but I'll use the term, does he believe that the principles of monotheism spelled out in the Old Testament are valid?
Well, I can't speak for Michael Perutka, but I can speak for myself, and I believe that principles spelled out in the Old Testament, in the Ten Commandments, and the are the foundation upon which this country was based.
Well,
I believe that the founding fathers of this country were students of Blackstone, and if you read William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, upon which all of American law was based for almost 125 or 150 years, that was built based upon the Bible. So the commentaries on the laws of England by William Blackstone certainly I think is a testimony to the belief of our founding fathers and for the people who really ran this country for close to 150 years, that law is based upon the Bible.
Every American needs to read Blackstone's commentaries. I've had the good fortune of reading large portions of them. I obviously haven't read all of them. They're quite extensive, but they need to be read. And don't be fazed when he badmouths the colonists for trying to get independence. He was wrong on that, but he was still respected by Americans and looked up to, ironically, even though he tended towards Toryism, he was looked up to more by early America than he was in his own country, because he understood, as early Americans understood, that law needs to be codified and that constitutions are the way to go, written constitutions, not unwritten constitutions. So, you know, in a sense, it's sort of one of these ironies that he was looked up to so highly here, and yet he understood that, as he understood divine law, he understood that it was the foundation of freedom, and Blackstone absolutely should be read by modern Americans, and we do need to get back to the common law.
All right,
the common law being based in certain very profound divine principles.
Okay, fine.
If Michael Perutka believes that, then that's very good. That goes
well, I can't speak for him. I suspect he does, but
okay.
I can't speak for him. But thanks so much for
calling,
Nathan. And let me simply comment that Blackstone's views, and he was writing in the 1700s, really were reflecting in many respects the views of John Locke, who was writing in the 1600s, who talked about these concepts of nature's God and nature's law. And you must understand these ideas were really the foundations of the freedom that we have. And the whole idea was that there is a divine law. And that divine law wants men to be free. And one of the fundamental principles of that divine law was the right of property to life, liberty, and property. That's what, of course, what John Locke wrote about. He also wrote about the concept that there is a natural law that's out there. You can just see it manifested every place you go in the cycles of nature, in the in the balance of the stars. Well, of course, those ideas then were carried forward 100 years later by Blackstone, and that, of course, became the foundation upon which America was based. And in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, they speak of nature's God and nature's law, and those ideas came from Blackstone, but originally from John Locke. Well, let's go right now to Flora, and she wants to talk about boating. Hi, Flora. Where are you calling from?
No, actually, it's Lorna.
Lorna. Okay, Lorna.
Yeah,
where are you
from Idaho.
From Idaho, okay.
Yes. I was just calling. I just wanted to make a point and maybe see how you feel about it, but I feel that most people don't even bother voting for issues anymore. It's basically just like a beauty contest with the best speaker, and as long as they've got an R or D behind their name, that's basically who they're going to vote for, and no matter what issues that they would be against. Like, I know people that would be completely against the immigration and against a lot of the things that George Bush is allowing, but because Bush is doing it, they are allowing it to happen.
Sure.
And they don't say anything, and they won't take a stand. I mean, I almost feel that if Al Gore had won, that a lot of these Republicans and people on the Free Republic and everything, they would be taking a stand against these things that are happening in our country right now.
And I think that the Iraq War was planned long before George Bush got into the White House. If you read the book, it's called The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill, who was the Secretary of Treasury. He said that in January or February of 2001, that's 8 or 9 months before the 9/11 attack, he goes to the first cabinet meeting, and what are they talking about? The Social Security problem, the spending here in America, the poverty, in certain parts of our community. No, they're talking about how are we going to get in the war with Iraq? How are we going to divide up the oil? That was 7 or 8 months before the 9/11 attack. The book, The Price of Loyalty, if you want the exact page references, you can, of course, go to my website at RadioLiberty.com, and we actually give you the exact references in that book where you can find the quotations. So, but I agree with you totally, Flora. We've got to get people to understand what the issues are, and the real issue is not a Republican or Democrat. It's Constitution or concentration camps, because those are the two alternatives. We either get back to our Constitution, Republic, and limit the power of government, or we're going to lose our freedom.
Well, I've made the decision that if I vote, it would probably be Constitution Party, win or lose. I don't care. At least I'm putting my voice in saying, hey, there's something wrong with what's going on.
Well, I tell you what, somebody here in California wanted to have a place on the ballot saying, listing all of the candidates and then a place for none of the above. Of course, they wouldn't allow that to be on there because they've got to convince us that this is democratic, and as long as we vote, the majority of the people vote for a tyrant, why, that's perfectly all right as long as the majority votes for him, and that's how they got Adolf Hitler in Germany.
Yes.
And we need to get people who believe in the Constitution, who believe in limiting the power of government, because liberty and limited government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous, and which way are we headed, towards limited government or total government?
Have you read also the mental, where they want to do the mental screenings, and they've actually even are pretty much going to try to start it in Illinois?
Well, all I can say is I think that we've got to get to as many people as we can in the time that God allows us and allots us, and try to get people to understand and to care. But I honestly believe that we're going to have an opportunity to reach a lot more people in the coming months, because I think we're going to have an increasing problems, economic problems here in the United States. They may very well allow some terrorist attacks. But believe me, they are monitoring everything these terrorists do. There's no way you can have a terrorist organization that doesn't have an country behind it. And the only question is, what country was financing Al-Qaeda? Who put up all the massive amounts of money for the hijackers as they were living high on the hog here in the United States? And, of course, anybody would like to get my latest newsletter. That's the July newsletter. I think you'll be fascinated to find out that the FBI was tracking Mohammed Atta long before the 9/11 attack. But they just haven't told the American people, and they're doing everything they can to keep the American people from finding that out. Because if they were tracking him, did they know what was planned? Well, do you have anything else you wanted to say, Flora? We're just about out of time.
No. Thank you, and God bless you, and keep doing the wonderful work.
Well, we will, and your job is to get people up there in Idaho listening to our programs and hopefully getting other people listening, because our job is to get them educated, and you should be setting up institutes of the Constitution and teaching people the fundamentals of our freedom.
Okay.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Okay, fine. Well, this is the time when, of course, we've got to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out there who listen to us to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio someplace in America, 5 hours every day on the Internet, and you can get the references to that at RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. 4 hours a day on shortwave, and we're booming in now with these new frequencies, and 4 hours every day by certainly satellite, and hopefully soon 5 hours every day. And we need to get stations all across America pulling us down. We find that other stations we didn't even know were pulling us down are. We're hearing from people in Texas, and I don't know what stations is pulling us down, but God bless them for doing it. And there's stations up in Idaho that are doing the same. Go to your local station. See if they'll pull our programs down. We can get to these satellite references, and of course, you pull the programs down with our blessing. We're just trying to get the truth out. So go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and look at the various items we have there. Pull down our newsletters. Now, we'll be glad, of course, to send you a free copy of our May-June newsletter. The question is, who was Osama bin Laden, really? Who was Osama bin Laden? And then, of course, the July newsletter tells you what really took place on the morning of September 11th, 2001, not what you think you saw on television, because, of course, they created your reality that morning. They manipulated your emotions for the first several days. What really happened? And there is a smoking gun in the 9/11 hearings that nobody ever mentions, so we're going to tell you what it is. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a free copy of our July newsletter, but you'll have to request that specifically. Otherwise, you'll get the last month's newsletter. It'll be another week before the July newsletter is ready to go out. And then, of course, we hope that maybe you'll want to get some of the items we carry, like my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which gives you an understanding of the spiritual battle we're involved in. The video we're featuring now, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, where you'll hear the performers talking about how they sold their souls to the devil. And most of the major rock and roll stars, some of the most popular rock and roll stars of all time, openly admitted that they were under demonic control. Because why? So many of the songs talk about why, when the world will be as one, coming together, world government, and of course, this is Satan's idea, the New World Order, the New World Religion. And so, with that as a background, remember that you should pray for America, and you want to pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, is there any reason why God should not destroy America after he's destroyed any other nations ever turned against him throughout all history? And then lastly, of course, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until, we'll be back in the next hour, but for the people up in Washington, why, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is, for this hour, is Dr. Christopher Husser, and we're going to be talking about Lyme disease. And this may feel like it's a long way from Lyme disease to presidential politics, but, well, I would like to suggest that we're not getting the truth about many of the things that are going on. In this last hour, we talked about the fact that there are people who feel that they're just too many people in the world. And, of course, where did Lyme disease come from? Well, it came from a place called Lyme, Connecticut. And where is Lyme, Connecticut? Why, it's right across the internet from a place called Plum Island, where the government has been doing secret biological warfare experiments for a long time. Now, the first cases of Lyme disease were described in about 1977. And, of course, it started out in Lyme, Connecticut. It started out primarily as an arthritis, and now Lyme disease is found all across America. In fact, then, of course, where did West Nile virus come from? Well, of course, originally it was the West Nile area, but this was used for, they were doing all sorts of experiments on this for biological warfare, and all of a sudden, we had our first cases here in the 1990s, here in the United States. Never seen this here before. And now it's spread all across America. How do these things happen? Oh, well, of course, we've always had these diseases. No, we've never had these diseases in America before. They're new diseases. Where did AIDS come from? Where did Ebola virus come from? And why does it suddenly appear and then just as quickly disappear? And why are there all the various strains? Why is there not one AIDS virus, but, of course, about 9 different subdivisions of the AIDS virus? Where do they all come from? Well, let's get back, though, to Lyme disease, because there are so many people that are suffering from this terrible disease. I know in my community they have a Lyme disease support group, and the problem is most doctors, well, you know, if you have the acute presentation and you have a positive blood test, that's fine, but what about the people with the chronic disease? So, Dr. Husser, I understand that you have actually treated thousands of people with this disease. Is that right?
This disease process for over 15 years. I'm originally from Michigan. I'm living in Reno, Nevada now, and I started to see this disease raise its ugly head when I was back in Michigan. So over the course of 15 years, I've seen hundreds and hundreds, and it probably has to total in the thousands of patients. Some patients didn't believe me when I told them they had a disease, of course, and a lot of people are still with me, and a lot of people have been cured, and some people continue to be sick.
Now, of course, you have both a dental degree and a doctorate degree. You have a doctor of osteopathy, and doctors of osteopathy have exactly the same training as medical doctors as well, don't they?
That's correct, sir.
So you are pretty well trained in several fields. And so are you practicing dentistry, or are you just practicing taking care of these unfortunate people that most people really don't want to take care of because they don't know what to do for them?
Most of my practice involves chronic degenerative diseases. I don't do any general dentistry. However, I do a lot of oral surgical procedures where I take out dead teeth and dead infected bone from the jaws, and I'm able to relieve certain maladies, including chronic fatigue, facial pain, headaches, arthritides, chest pain, low back pain, or weird neurological problems that don't quite make sense.
And, of course, one of these days we're going to have to back and get you to do a program on the root canal, which is one of the mainstays of dentistry. And, of course, what most people don't understand is that this can create disastrous consequences. But let's not get off into all these other things. Let's just stick with Lyme disease, because I think that this is such an important issue. So why don't you give us the background of the disease, how it presents in the acute form, and then, of course, what happens when it comes to be chronic. Because there's an old saying when I went to medical school, it was from William Oechsler, and it said, no syphilis and you know medicine, because there could be so many manifestations of syphilis. And then, of course, it came to be, well, no AIDS, and then you know medicine, because there's so many manifestations of AIDS. But I think today we might very well carry that over to Lyme disease. No Lyme disease, and you know medicine. Pick the story up from there.
Well said, Doctor. You know, as they call syphilis the great masquerader, well, the borrelial organism is of that same family. It's a spirochetal in nature. In other words, it resembles a worm or a snake-like when it's looked at under a microscope. When, in fact, that's probably the best way to diagnose both Lyme's and syphilis under the Darfield microscope, which is what we used to do a long time ago. Very few people now are even versed in using a microscope to see these critters under a microscope.
Okay, fine. And, of course, the dark field was a very, very specific means of seeing it. Now, how do you diagnose? Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and Just give us the background, your thoughts on this, and then I'll start asking you some questions later. Because if I ask you questions, we won't get through the important issues that you want to bring up.
Well, I'll just keep rambling, and you stop me, and you ask me questions when you feel appropriate. The most important point for me to make for the audience, the listening audience this evening, is that Lyme disease is a clinical diagnosis. In other words, the doctor should have some suspicion of the disease process when he sees that patient enter his office based on what he sees in the patient as far as symptoms and signs, but of course the patient tells him. It is not a laboratory diagnosis. You use a laboratory to confirm your diagnosis, your clinical impression. Now, the unfortunate thing in our country is there's very few laboratories that have testing that is sensitive enough to identify the organism once it's in you. If you have just got bitten by a tick that's infected, you will not have positive test results, at least that can be detected, for at least 4 to 6 weeks, usually. That's the time when your greatest chance for a cure is. Subsequent to a tick bite, you put the patient on antibiotics now. That's your greatest chance for a cure.
And, of course, you make the diagnosis, don't you, by the rash, the so-called target lesion?
Yes, that's called the erythema migrans, is this characteristic bullseye rash. However, the rash can present in a myriad of different ways, and less than 50% of the people who are infected remember seeing any kind of rash on their body. So, you can't go by that as your primary diagnostic criteria.
Okay, fine. And so then the people come in, they have a history of a tick bite, they've got a fever, they've got malaise, they've got hurt all over, they may even have a little stiff neck, they may have a forgetfulness or fatigue, but of course it's a clinical diagnosis before the blood test comes. And there are actually two blood tests. One of them is an ELISA test, very similar in some respects to the HIV test, and then you do a confirmatory Western blot, is that right?
Well, that's usually what the CDC recommends. However, the ELISA test is invariably insensitive, maybe up to 80% with false negatives. The Western blot is, of course, what most insurance companies want to see to prove that you indeed have a disease. The gold standard is the PCR, which means a polymerized chain reaction where you're actually looking for bits of that critter's RNA or DNA, their exact genetic code, in your sample of tissue, whether it be blood, urine, cerebrospinal fluid, or whatever tissue you're examining. That's the gold standard. But unfortunately, you don't necessarily find it all the time in there.
Well, if you don't find it and you don't have a positive blood test, then how do you make the diagnosis? Because there are so many people who have fatigue and they have ache all over and they may have multiple other symptoms that go along with it, the arthritides, the cerebral changes, the forgetfulness. This can involve literally every organ in the body.
Yes. Well, as you know, the Lyme's organism likes to affect three major components to the body, either the neurological system, which encompasses the eyes or ophthalmological system, the cardiovascular system, and the musculoskeletal system. And oftentimes you'll see all three manifestations on the same patient, and they are very, very ill. And getting back to your original patient we just described a few minutes ago, if you see someone who has, for example, has been on a camping trip or has been outside or has been with a Boy Scout troop or somewhere out in the woods, where we know that this Lyme organism lives in the ticks in that area, then it would behoove you to give the patient at that point antibiotics. And usually I would give dual antibiotics for at least a month if they present with flu-like symptoms subsequent to an outdoor camping excursion or the like. If they present with flu-like symptoms, arthritides, any presentation like that can represent an infection by the Lyme's organism, which is referred to as the Borrelia burgdorferi. It's a bacterium.
It's a spirochete, like the syphilis spirochete, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, nowadays, we know that the tick, not only can you be plagued by this beryllium, the spirochete, we know the tick carries at least three other infectious agents, which are totally unrelated to the Borrelia. Number one, you have Babesia, B-A-B-E-S-I-A, which is from the family of malaria, and that can cause fever, chills, aches, pains, fibromyalgia. And this is an infection usually in the soft tissue. Most medical textbooks say it's self-limiting, not to worry about, but when it becomes synergized with this Borrelia strain, now you have more serious problems. Other bacterium that we know is carried by a tick is Ehrlichia. And this is a bacterium that affects white blood cells, in particular the granulocytes or the monocytes of our immune system. The Babesia, as far as a malarial parasite, likes to infect red blood cells, and you can see anemia with these patients, and iron loss anemia, and irregular red blood cells when you look under a microscope. There's also Bartonella. And Bartonella is responsible for cat scratch disease. And now we're finding tularemia in some of these cats and are in some of these ticks, and relapsing fever, especially in California.
All right, well, that'll be over there in Nevada.
Well, it's here now. It's here now. I've had patients from the lake.
All right, then how, of course, you do make the diagnosis. You draw blood tests, they run the blood test, and they may not actually find any evidence of the organism in the blood test.
If you were to come into my office and I were to send you to my local little laboratory, and I won't mention any names, I don't care how sick you are with the bug, the chances of that laboratory finding that bug in you with an ELISA is slim to none. I use two laboratories in the country. One is in California, and if it's all right, I can mention their name. Is that all right?
Sure, go ahead.
It's Igenex in Palo Alto, and I-G-N-E-X. And the lab that I use almost exclusively now is a laboratory down in Tarpon Springs, Florida, and it's called the Bowen Laboratory, and they do research. They're doing a research on the bug now, but if it's there in the patient's blood, that test will find it.
Now, if it's, they're looking for the spirochete, then the evidence of the spirochete. Does the spirochete remain in the blood, or does it primarily get into the organs and stay there in the brain and the heart and certainly in the musculoskeletal system?
If you were to come into my office and I were to take some blood and study it under a microscope, the chances of me seeing spirochetes right away are very slim. However, if you study that blood over days, you will see it come out of the red blood cell membrane. So it likes to live in the membrane of the red blood cell. Actually, it disguises itself. In addition, it lives in other tissues.
Well, now, of course, they're using the PCR. And for our listener out there, that is, of course, where they're actually looking for some of the genetic makeup of the organism. That's what the PCR, that's how you count, the virus, retrovirus in AIDS cases. Today, they look for the viral load. So are you looking for, can you actually determine the spirochetal load with some sort of a PCR?
The Bowen Laboratory will give you a spirochetal load in terms of titers, 1 to 128 being the highest titer, and I've seen many, many patients come across with high titers like that. Some are very ill at that point, and some don't really show that they have a disease process at all. It depends on their immune system.
Well, because the symptoms of chronic Lyme disease, I mean, initially we always thought of it simply as an arthritis, but apparently we're recognizing increasingly it can become a chronic disease, multiple faceted, that appears very similar to chronic fatigue syndrome, that appears similar to chronic fibromyalgia, and of course, so how do you separate one from the other, or are they all interrelated?
Well, they're all interrelated, but let's assume that we're seeing a patient with chronic late-stage Lyme disease, which most of the time you're going to see nervous system manifestations.
And by what sort of nervous system manifestations?
Well, the biggest ones that come to my mind are multiple sclerosis and ALS. Now, when you test these patients with the test I mentioned to you, you will find Lyme disease in their nervous system with these patients, MS and ALS. Now, I got started in this business 15 years ago thanks to one of my mentors, a Dr. Lida Matman, who was a Nobel laureate PhD from Wayne State University, who is recognized for her knowledge on cell wall deficient organisms that can live inside you, impervious to your immune system by shedding their cell wall.
No, Chris, is that like a mycoplasm?
That's well, any organism can be cell wall deficient. Lyme disease, Borrelia, mycoplasms. You see a lot of mycoplasms in the blood of these patients who are ill. So most of these patients have multiple infections. It's not just one. But when you see a patient with chronic neurological problems, multiple sclerosis, ALS, chronic depression, maybe in addition to arthritis, and maybe some cardiac symptoms, then you have to be very suspicious of this organism. And I have found this time and time again on these chronically ill patients. In addition, a lot of them have infections in their jaw. They have root canals and stuff that contribute to this immune system depression and fatigue. But this disease, once it gets into the nervous system, it's very chronic and it's very, very difficult to get out, and you have to use long-term IV antibiotics in addition to oral antibiotics for months and months and months.
Well, now, of course, are you suggesting that all MS or all anterior lateral sclerosis, for our listeners, anterior lateral sclerosis is so-called Lou Gehrig's disease, a progressive neurological disease, a terrible disease because these people get weaker and weaker and weaker until sometimes they just can't move at all. They just sort of sit in a wheelchair and they can't even talk. And somebody, they communicate by moving their blinking their eyes, but are you suggesting all of these are related to Lyme disease or to a chronic mycoplasma infection, or are some of them, or what percentage of them would you say are related to that?
I think that MS and ALS is related to Lyme disease in all cases.
But of course, we had MS long before we had Lyme disease, at least. I remember seeing MS and ALS when I was a medical student. That was back in the late 1940s, going over to the old Laguna Honda Hospital in San Francisco, and there were cases of MS, and we didn't know even Lyme disease existed at that time.
Well, let's back up a little bit. I know that I heard you mention that the discovery of this this spirochete in Lyme, Connecticut, 1975. However, there's some literature about during the Revolutionary War about British soldiers that were quartered in the northeast portion of our country that came down with unexplained arthritides. There's a book that I recommend to the listening personnel tonight, and that's called Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus by Rachel Verdon, and she talks about, she did some incredible research, the author, who does have Lyme's herself, using the Freedom of Information Act, where this may indeed be something that has been generated. If you follow my logic here.
No, the title is Lyme Disease and the SS what?
SS Elbrus. The SS Elbrus was a liberty ship that we had lent to our Russian allies.
ELBERT?
SS, two capital S's,
right,
followed by ELBRUS. Elbrus.
Elbrus, okay.
And now you actually can get this off of Amazon.com. And through the Freedom of Information Act, incredible research, this woman showed that indeed, the Germans had been playing with this for over 100 years, these particular spirochetes. They were using them for germ warfare. They were doing research on this. And indeed, some of this may have been brought over with them when we acquired some of these Russian-German scientists after World War II.
All right, well, of course, they came over and they did an awful lot of harm. And for those people who don't know, at the end of the Second World War, we brought many of the Nazi scientists to the United States under Operation Paperclip. We helped many of the Nazis escape to South America. People like Adolf Eichmann and Klaus Barbie and Dr. Mengele and Heinrich Mueller and Martin Bormann, all helped by people working for the American CIA and OSS. This is covered in a book called Medusa File that was so good that the Simon & Schuster and the other major publishers back east would not publish it. Why? Because as one of the editors told my friend Craig Roberts, who wrote the book, I'd lose my job. The CIA has people planted here in every major publisher in New York. If I published your book, I'd lose my job, but you need to get that information out. The book is now called The Medusa File, and we carry it. We also, of course, one of these days are going to do a book review on The Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. You go up on the web, try to find that. It'll cost you over $100 for a copy of Linda Hunt's book, The Secret Agenda, because they don't want you to know how we, people within the dark side of our government, help the Nazis escape to South America and the United States. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Christopher Husser, and we're going to be talking about this. But Christopher is suggesting that maybe, just maybe, that some of this was brought over here by the Nazi scientists who'd been working on this for a long time. Isn't it interesting that the first cases reported in the United States were just across the inlet from the place where government was doing secret experiments on Plum Island? We'll be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Christopher Husser, and we're talking about the Lyme disease. You pick up the story from there.
We were talking about chronicity in the central nervous system,
right,
which is probably the most lethal and the most difficult to treat, because it's often very difficult to get your antibiotics to penetrate into the fluid that obeys the brain and the meninges and the spinal cord.
It doesn't want to cross the blood-brain barrier, which, of course, allows the antibiotics to get into the central nervous system. So go ahead.
Right. Now, over the last 15 years, the best antibiotic I've used is an IV antibiotic called ceftriaxone, and in high doses, you can push it across the membranes of the brain that crosses the blood-brain barrier, especially when there's a slight amount of inflammation. And literally, on several MS patients who have the characteristic white plaques on an MRI or CT scan, you can get rid of those with long-term antibiotics. And in fact, one of the original researchers of this from Wayne State University, a gentleman who has since long passed, was an MD by the name of Gabriel Steiner, and there's many websites devoted to his work, and he would perform autopsies on these patients who had MS at the time, and did indeed find spirochetes in high numbers in these white plaques of the central nervous system. And so Dr. Mattman continued his work, and that's what you're seeing in some of these MS and ALS patients. Now,
What percentage of the patients can you help, with high-dose antibiotics? 25%, 50%, 75%? What would you estimate of those that you see?
Well, I've had ALS patients die. I've probably had 5 or 6 ALS patients in the last 5 or 6 years. 2 have survived. If they jump in and get on board right away and listen to your therapies, I use other things in addition to IV antibiotics, but it's a multi-modality type of treatment to help these patients. Oftentimes, they have been given a diagnosis of ALS by the neurologist, and that switch is thrown in the brain saying, I have an incurable disease, and I have approximately 3.5 years to die. So the most important thing at this stage is to get that switch turned back on, give them some hope, and say, here's some literature. We think you have Lyme disease. We have a positive test from you. Since most of modern medicine hasn't a clue where ALS comes from, here is a little bit of hope that may help some of these people survive. And the sad part about MS and ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, is that it affects young people.
Yes, it is a terrible disease. I know the wife of a very close friend of mine developed this, and and 2 years later, she was dead. That horrible, horrible disease.
Now, the question it becomes, why would somebody with Lyme's get ALS or MS, and somebody like myself who may have Lyme's, and I might have a little arthritis or something like that? Well, some of the literature thinks that, and I think this is true, because most of these patients live outside. They're campers, they're hunters, they're fishers. They're always outside, and they've probably gotten multiple tick bites over the years, and have gotten quite a load, a spirochetal load, over that time period. And, of course, it took so long to diagnose that they might have been fine, and all of a sudden they come down with symptoms of ALS. So you have to start working on diminishing the spirochetal load through oral and IV antibiotics.
Okay, fine. And so you say you've had 6 have died and 4 of 6 have died and 2 have recovered, or at least are much better.
That's for ALS. MS,
right.
MS seems to be an easier disease to treat because the symptoms aren't as severe, and usually you have more time. Once you're given a diagnosis of ALS, usually
the hold that thought right there. We want to bring our stations back on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Christopher Husser, Dr. Christopher Husser, whose office is up there in Nevada. Are you in Reno?
Yes, sir.
Okay, fine. And so you're saying that, of course, MS seems to be easier to treat. Of course, characteristically, MS will have periods of exacerbation and remission, but the course is usually one of progressive increased neurological deficit with each exacerbation. So I'll pick up the story there.
The ALS patients tend to go down a very rapid course to their demise. Usually it's about 3.5 year average. And they develop signs and symptoms of ventral root disorders, which means they lose muscle ability to use their muscles. They're not getting signals from the ventral roots of the spinal cord. And so they have a shuffling gait. They have to swing their arms because they can't lift their arms. They become severely atrophic. They lose muscle mass rapidly, and their muscles of their neck atrophy very rapidly, and indeed they die on their own secretions, or they choke to death, and they can't lift their head when it gets so weak. It's just a horrendous way to die, and I've seen several patients expire that way. MS, like you say, is a disease not quite as severe. It does affect the nervous system, but you can get alternating periods of exacerbations and progressive debilitation, but it's not a disease that will take you in 3 years. It's rare to see that. These patients do well with IV and oral antibiotics. Now, there are other things that usually you find in these patients. For some reason, the European literature often will quote, there are low-grade viral infections. One is called the Coxsackie virus, C-O-X-S-A-C-H-I-E. And there are different strains of the Coxsackie virus, and that likes to live in our mouth in certain areas, in the wisdom teeth areas. But this seems to have a part in these patients. And in ALS, there are certain textbooks I've come across on infectious diseases that say polio might be a contributory factor in this disease process, with, in addition to multiple spirochete bites over time. Now, most of us have gotten, as children, vaccinated against polio with the sugar cubes that we used to take in grade school. Now, indeed, did that set up our nervous system to be eventually caused demise by infection with another infecting agent, i.e. Lyme disease? We don't know these facts yet. But you have to look for a different, multiple pathologies or etiologies on these patients. But the primary one in my investigative work has been Lyme disease.
Well, now, what about some people feel that there's a mycoplasm plays a large part in this as well? And you mentioned that many of these patients have concomitant mycoplasm disease. And, of course, all these are manifestations of immune system dysfunction. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. I mean, I don't know anybody in our culture today that doesn't have some type of immune system dysfunction. Between all the vaccinations we got, between the toxins in our system and the poisons that we're exposed to daily basis, and the poor food supply that we have now, we can't help to have poor immune systems.
Okay, so, but anyway, then with the MS patients, if treated with massive antibiotics, is there some of these people go into more or less permanent remission or temporary remission or what?
I've seen patients with temporary remissions. I've seen patients, remissions, of, for example, with MS last as long as 10 years, and then symptoms come back, and you retreat them again.
Well, if you could help those people, why, of course, this would be really one of the most dramatic things, and because they're usually very, very productive people, and it's been a terrible, terrible disease to see progress through the years.
So these patients, you're right, they're struck at a very young age, and unfortunately, the medical profession has no working diagnosis for these patients. Well, it's been in the literature, just that you have to look a little bit and be open to things. And see that, these neurological diseases are infections that likes to lodge in our nervous system.
Well, of course, you can actually see them now that we have MRIs and other types of scans. You can actually see the changes of the white patches within the neurological system that are so characteristic of multiple sclerosis.
That's right, and you can also follow these patients and see if your therapy is working, i.e. your antibiotics, because most of the time these plaques will go away. It takes many, many months, but you can get them to resolve.
Well, now, of course, if you're giving the large doses of antibiotics over a period of many months, don't you get complications as far as killing off the normal bacteria and then, of course, setting up other problems, diarrhea, yeast infections, things like that?
I have been very lucky over the last 15 years that my complication rate from antibiotic has been quite low, but I think my patients have they're on multiple vitamins, they're taking coenzyme Q10, they're taking probiotics, lactobacillus acidophilus, lactobacillus bifidus, they're staying away, they have to eliminate white flour, white sugar, and no alcohol. And I have them on these strict diets, and they do quite well. I don't see the chronic diarrhea cases, and they do well with the antibiotics.
All right, hang on, we'll be back in just a moment. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, don't hesitate to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Christopher Husser, and he's from Reno, and he, of course, treats people with these chronic infections. And now, do some of these people actually benefit from dental extractions, in your experience, or would you simply take out the teeth that have had the root canals on them?
Are you referring to a patient that has Lyme's too?
Right, right.
What I usually do, the best test that I have for those patients is I can take an x-ray, a panel x-ray of their jaws, and you can see the infected teeth. You can see the areas of infected bone where teeth used to be. And most of us, 99% of the adult population in our country has chronic osteomyelitis, osteonecrosis, where our wisdom teeth used to be. So we're fighting subclinical infections on a daily basis. What I like to do is take a small amount of local anesthetic, just plain dental numb like Novocaine or Lidocaine, plain, and administer a small amount of local anesthetic to those areas in the gums intraorally with a very fine needle. And if that patient perceives response, in other words, if they feel their symptoms get better for the next 7 to 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours, 12 hours oftentimes, then you know that there's a dental component to their disease. So what you're doing is playing games with the body's electrical system and saying, if I were to remove these infections from your jaw, i.e. dead teeth or chronic infections in the jawbone, how would you feel if I were to remove those from your nervous system? And if they respond favorably, like, well, my back pain's gone, or my fibromyalgia is better, or my arm pain is better, or my headache, then you know you have a dental component to the disease. And indeed, some people have both.
Or, okay, fine. And so that's, I know, 50 years ago, one of the treatments up at the Mayo Clinic was people would come in with these bizarre clinical entities, multiple aches, multiple pains, chronic arthritides, and they'd pull out all their teeth. And, you know, a significant number of them got well enough that they continued doing that. Now, it wasn't very scientific. I don't think they really had any idea what they were doing. It was more or less an empirical treatment. But, you know, the Mayo Clinic, at least in those days, had a pretty good record. And I remember one of my teachers had a trained at the Mayo Clinic, and he was doing that on a lot of his patients. And, you know, well, I won't mention his name, but he was very, very prominent in Oakland as one of the leading orthopedists there, a great orthopedist, and he helped a lot of people. Of course, I don't think you need to pull out all the teeth. Maybe this selective treatment of these areas with a chronic infection, this is really what you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly. No, I don't edentulate everybody, but you'd be surprised at how these infections do spread throughout the jaw, and you can be fooled if you're conservative, but this goes back to...
Well, we're going to have to hold that thought, because we're going to have to bring our other stations back on board, and we've got all sorts of people calling in. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now we've got Bill calling from Florida, and I know Bill's because we've talked in the past, and Bill has a chronic fatigue type of syndrome. And Bill, how long have you been laid up with your chronic disease?
Right now, it's been since 94, but it's gotten worse since 2000.
Okay, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I have a couple quick questions. What does he find on mercury amalgam contributing to the Lyme disease?
Let's just take one question. Does mercury amalgam play any part at all in these diseases?
Certainly, a mercury amalgam can cause immune system suppression. We shouldn't be allowing mercury in our teeth. It's a known neurotoxin, and it does leak out, and it does leach into the system, and it loves the brain and fatty-like material like the brain and spinal cord. The problem is it's hard to prove that there's a relationship. I don't see much of a relationship between mercury fillings and Lyme disease. Obviously, with Lyme disease, you have a separate infection, but indeed, mercury can wear down your body's defenses. It's very difficult to find a dentist in our country that will take out mercury fillings without killing your teeth. Once you have a dead tooth, that's worse than a tooth containing mercury, because that tooth is now infected. And the toxic load from a dead tooth is worse than just a plain mercury tooth.
Is that what they call cavitation underneath?
No, a cavitation is an area in the jawbone where a tooth used to be that now is, the bone is now usually, it's osteonecrotic, which means it's dead, and it's full of bacteria. And that's what Dr. Montich has mentioned when back 100 years ago we used to take people's teeth out, and oftentimes their arthritis got better. The reason that didn't work on a lot of people was because we just pulled dead teeth out and left infected bone behind. You have to open the jaws, take out the dead teeth, and remove all dead bone, and then you close the gums up. And that's when you see your results.
Do you have a contact number or website?
Do I? No, I have a contact number here in my office. If I had a website, I'd never get any sleep.
Okay, fine. Do you want to put out your contact number?
My number in Reno is 775-826-1200. But there are so much material on the web on cavitations and mercury fillings and root canals that I encourage you to look there first.
All right, and the other thing is, Bill, is maybe do you know of anybody down in the Florida area is doing your type of work?
Yeah, I found a dentist down in Sanford, Florida, which is just north of Orlando, and then an IAOMT doctor diagnosed me with the Lyme down in Clearwater.
All right,
fine.
I was tested there by Bowen.org. That's the website for Dr. Whitaker that does the blood test.
Yes.
Could you give your phone number again, please?
Pardon me?
Could you give your phone number again?
My phone number at my office in Reno is 775-826-1200.
Okay,
Bill, do you have any other questions?
No, I'm glad to hear you got him on. I hope you get him back again.
Okay,
thank
fine.
You.
Well, we got a lot of things to talk about, but we're going to stick with this one thing tonight. Let's go to Craig calling from Albany, New York. Hi, Craig. How are you doing? Craig, are you there? Craig, are you there in Albany? Well, it looks like we've lost Craig in Albany, so if Craig would like to call back, why, we'd be glad to talk to him. But I guess Craig is gone. So, anyway, if you'd like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, or I would love to hear from you. So, or Craig, if you'd like to call back from Albany, New York, why, we'd be glad to put you on. But now, as you treat the people, and of course, is this a separate entity from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, or is it all sort of one disease, you think, or all different manifestations of the same immunological dysfunction?
I think it's probably a manifestation of multiple problems. I'm sure that many, many patients with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue do have Lyme's, but they also have infections in their jaw. They also may have heavy metal toxicity. So the physician that can get to the heart of that and find out what the correct diagnosis is the one that's going to get the results. So those doctors that do maybe kinesiology or electroacupuncture testing or specific blood testing for heavy metals, or they have a knack for diagnosing these patients, those are the ones that usually get results. Otherwise, you're guessing. You're relying on blood tests that may not be accurate.
Well, now, of course, does this laboratory down in Florida that you mentioned, were they, of course, look for the heavy metals and other things as well?
No, they don't do that. They're strictly for, when you send a blood sample, they'll check it for Borrelia, which is the causative agent for Lyme's, Babesia, which is the malaria-like parasite, and then they'll check it for Ehrlichia, those three.
All right, fine. And, of course, do they usually occur together in many of these patients?
No question. And those patients that are usually ill are more significantly ill with Lyme disease, for example, MS and ALS, they will have other co-infections, primarily Babesia, which, don't forget, is a malaria-like parasite, which can cause fever, chills, muscle aches and pains, fibromyalgia, fatigue, because it destroys the red blood cells, anemia.
Well, now, of course, you mentioned also that it affects the heart as well. You mentioned that it affects the musculoskeletal system, it affects the brain and neurological symptoms, and it affects the heart. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the heart problem?
Over the years, 15 years, I started seeing young people who had cardiac symptoms that didn't make sense. You know, I can remember seeing a 35-year-old male who had a cardiac pacemaker, which didn't make sense to me for a 35-year-old male. And, of course, the cardiologist didn't know why he put it in other than he had a bradycardia, a slow heart rate, and he had to pulse it. And this gentleman, this was back in Michigan, went on to have Lyme disease. And I believe we did treat him with antibiotics, and he was able to turn off the pacemaker. His rhythm came back to a normal rhythm without the pacemaker because he had infections in his heart. There's a lot of people who have rheumatoid arthritis that have cardiac manifestations, young people in particular, and that's when you have to be suspicious of cardiac involvement with these younger patients. They have dysrhythmias, they have abnormal beats, they have infections on the heart valves. You can get endocarditis from Lyme disease. That's been documented many, many times. So when you start having cardiac manifestations of shortness of breath or valvular dysfunction, arrhythmias, a young patient, you have to, or heart block, yet to be suspicious of this disease. Once again, it's a clinical diagnosis. Neurologically, patients who present with Bell's palsy, which is usually a unilateral paralysis of the face, we were always taught in school that that was a viral problem.
Right.
Indeed, probably now it's Lyme's disease.
Oh, can it be either one? In other words, does it have to be all Lyme, or could it be some of them be viral and some of them be a Lyme?
It can be both, but you always have to be suspicious and check the patient, because if they present with Bell's palsy, that means they have, and it is Lyme disease, that means that the Lyme disease is in the central nervous system, and the more you let that go or you fail to treat it, the more irreversible the symptoms can become on that particular patient. And indeed, over the years, I've had three young people who are cortically blind because they found ticks in the back of their scalp. They had been hikers and guides outside in the woods, and they became blind from Lyme disease of the ophthalmic nerve. When they were failed, the doctor didn't believe they had Lyme's and then put them on antibiotics, when antibiotics could have saved their vision.
And of course, it's irreversible once it's established, huh?
That's the point. So you still have to try to treat them, but sometimes you just can't reverse the damage that's been done to it, especially the nervous system. It takes such a long time to regrow, if at all.
All right, well, let's go to Mel calling from Carmel. Hi, Mel. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. I had a question about having a post to support a bridge on your jaw
to replace teeth with. A post inside a root canal after a tooth has been root canaled?
Well, the teeth were knocked out, and I've had three posts placed in the front of my jaw to support a bridge that hasn't been developed yet. It hasn't been actually constructed yet, but the posts are there.
Are you talking about an actual implant into the jawbone?
Implants, yes.
Well, what are you asking me how I feel about that?
Yes.
I wouldn't have one put in my jaw.
Give me some rationale.
Well, first of all, you lost a tooth for a reason. That bone is infected. Nobody's gone in to clean out the bone to begin with. Now you're putting a foreign body, a metal implant, into a hole in your jawbone that's infected. Now you have two problems. And every patient I've ever seen over the last 10 years that had implants was always quite ill. And indeed, I've seen patients get implants in their jaw and die 3 or 4 months after that. From one died of ALS, one died of unexplained death within 2 or 3 months after implants. There's no way that I would have one in my jaw. I used to be a dentist.
Well, the teeth were knocked out, so it wasn't the diseased teeth. It was.
Well, why isn't the implant staying in the bone?
Well, the implant. I think the implant is in the
bone. Actually, had one get infected and was removed, and now the question is whether to replace that one or to get rid of them entirely.
Oh well, they're probably still infected, then I would assume. When you take these implants out, the type of bone that develops around them is very, very strange. It's almost like an epoxy, and it's not a healthy bone. And they all become infected over time. And even the titanium implants will migrate. The titanium is not inert either.
Well, what about putting them in with methylmethacrylate? Does that work, or are you just putting a methylmethacrylate on the top of infected bone?
No, these implants are actually screwed in or tapped in or whatever. They're usually screwed in now.
Okay.
Yeah. We haven't used methylmethacrylate to cement them in a jaw for a long time.
Well, because I'm an old doctor. I don't know all these fancy things you're doing. Mel, do you have anything else you'd like to ask?
No, that was my primary question.
Okay, fine. Thanks so very much. Let's go to Susan who's calling. She's from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mel. Susan, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I have a niece with Lyme's disease that was diagnosed 5 years ago. No, less than 5 years ago. 3 years ago. 5 years ago to 6 years ago, she was diagnosed with MS.
Yes.
But she's been reluctant to go the antibiotic way because of the response that a lot of doctors have to Lyme's disease. So she's going along with the MS treatment.
What is treatment is she having for her MS?
At this point, she's taking a drug that's supposed to draw the it's a new drug and I can't remember the name of it, and it's supposed to fool the body.
It postpones the obvious demise of the patient. It doesn't treat anything. It postpones what's supposed to happen. Once again, if you find if you have a disease, there has to be a cause for that disease process. So we haven't pursued this Lyme disease thing if you're a neurologist, because the tests are invariably insensitive unless you use the testing like Igenex or Bowen, or have a microscope where you can look at these patients' blood and indeed do confirm that it's there.
Yeah.
If she were to go on antibiotics, I'm sure she would feel better. That's the best test you have. In other words, if you have a clinical diagnosis, then you might as well base your treatment treatment regimens on how the patient feels.
Yeah, and
walking,
you know,
better. Are they out of the wheelchair? Can they think better? Are their neurological symptoms decreased?
Yeah, she's had you know, doctors who want to treat the Lyme's, and she has the neurological doctor, and she just goes back and forth. But one of the reasons why she didn't stick with the antibiotic is because she had that strong Herxheimer reaction and was bedded down for a couple of days, and it scared her.
But that's the greatest test you want. That means you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. And there was could you explain for our listeners what the Herxheimer reaction is? Because that is a term that's not very commonly used, and yet I remember learning about that some 50 years ago when I was in medical school. So you explain what the Herxheimer reaction is.
The Herxheimer reaction was initially applied to the treatment of syphilis when they gave patients who had syphilis medicine to treat the disease itself. It would kill the spirochete, the syphilis bug, and when that bug died, it would release the toxic poisons that it does produce into your system in more overwhelming numbers. So indeed, you actually got sicker before you got better.
Right.
In reality, that means you're on the right track. Now, I don't see that. I've seen it maybe once in 15 years, so you can't go by that as a guideline, but when you see it, that means you're in the right direction.
Okay, does that help you at all, Susan?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well, let's go to Theodora. Hi, Theodora. I haven't heard from you in some time. How are you doing?
Well, you do hear from me. And
I know I do.
And I would give thanks that I get to hear from you more often.
Anyway, did you anything you'd like to ask about?
Well, it may be off the wall, but I have a friend who was just diagnosed with mad cow.
Mad cow disease?
And
we're not supposed to have that here in the United
States. Well,
they call it Creutzfeldt-Jacobs disease, I think.
Well, that's what my friends are calling it, right. And he got diagnosed up in San Francisco at the university, and he had a spider bite behind his ear, which seems to have triggered it. But knowing how strange things are going on, and engineered viruses are
right.
Making the rounds under different forms, I'm wondering, they're basically accepting, at this point that, you know, taking the medicine that lets them stay around 2 months longer rather than looking for the cure.
All right.
So,
well, what are your thoughts on, do you know anything at all about the Creutzfeldt-Jacobs disease, or the so-called the mad cow disease?
Let's back up now. To get that diagnosis, you have to have a brain biopsy. Does your friend have a brain biopsy?
They've been jumping through the hoops, so I don't know the full details.
So you can't diagnose
that. They need a brain biopsy.
So I think you're guessing, and it's really hard to guess at mad cow's disease. I certainly would be looking at other things like Lyme disease.
Okay.
Maybe he's got some dead teeth. Or, the brown recluse spider can produce symptoms for quite a while afterwards, and that was the kind of patients you want to try to treat in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, maybe with some IV, heavy doses of IV vitamin C. Hyperbaric oxygen chamber.
You know, we've done some recent programs of Theodore on intravenous vitamin C. Now, that crazy Linus Pauling was talking about that 30 years ago, and he was curing a lot of people, or at least even people with cancers. They were living a lot longer and much more comfortably. But, we don't believe in that sort of thing anymore. And yet, of course, if you look at the studies done at that time and throughout the world, there was a great deal of benefit. Many of the patients that got massive doses of intravenous vitamin C did amazingly well.
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly it's whether people think something can be done or not, and that's once you open that door, it's amazing how many possibilities are out there for our healing.
Right.
And I thank you for bringing us another one.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so much, Theodore.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine, and while I'm thinking of it, I just want to mention that we are going to have an all-day seminar here in Santa Cruz on the 6th of November, and we hope that many of you will put that onto your calendar and be sure to be there. Got to start early in the morning and got to go until 5 in the evening. Got to have lunches we've had the last couple of years, and the good times had by all. So the 6th of November, it's a Saturday, it's going to be here at the Aptos Seascape, and we do hope that many of you will decide you're going to join us. So, give us a call, and we'll look forward to hearing from you. on that, because you'll have to make your reservations ahead of time. Well, our guest this evening, of course, is Christopher Husser. We're talking about Lyme disease and his experience treating this as a physician and as a dentist. So he has, you know, a couple of points of view that are a little, well, usually doctors look at things one way and dentists look at things another. And yet, of course, they're both important parts of our system. And I think that some of the things that are done in dentistry really can affect the rest of the body, don't you?
No question.
And do you advocate that people actually do take out their, you know, if they have a lot of mercury in their mouth, that they should get that out or not?
Well, I suggest they do it. First of all, get some tests to prove that you have indeed high levels of mercury, and that's relatively easy to do. You just can't go down and draw blood and check it for heavy metals, because heavy metals don't float around. Like Lyme's organisms don't float around. They like to go into tissue, so you need to coax the mercury out of the body first by giving a challenge test, usually with a medication called DMPS. That seems to be the best to get rid of mercury, but it's also good to give you a diagnostic test. You give an injection to the patient, or you give it a capsule, and you check the urine amount that comes out. That's one way to do it. But
yeah, and don't some people really be able to excrete the mercury fairly well, handle it? Other people just can't excrete it, and it tends to stay in their system, gets in the brain. And they're the ones that get into real problems, isn't that
right? Exactly. Well, that's the theory behind the autism, and why men don't excrete it as well as women. And there's four times as many autistic men than there are children as there are female children.
Right. Okay, we've got Diane calling from Santa Cruz. And hi, Diane. Diane, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, it's Diana from Aptos.
Oh, Diane from Aptos.
Yeah. Yeah, this guest is answering a lot of questions for me. I've had multiple tick bites. The red little deer tick from hiking with my dog in the woods. And even though I went to the doctors and I had to have some of them removed because they were on my back and I couldn't reach it, they never gave me an antibiotic of any kind. I could never get it. An antibiotic or anything from him, and I have all those symptoms. I've had them for quite some time, and when I've been given antibiotics for other things, I feel much better.
That's an empirical test. I use that quite frequently, too. If the patients get better and their symptomatology gets better, when you put them on an antibiotic that's appropriate for Lyme's, there's an empirical answer for you.
But, of course, you ordinarily put them on the medicine for a couple of months, don't you?
I usually do. Well, don't forget, by the time I see them, they've had it for a long time. Rare is it for me to see a person that gets a fresh tick bite.
Yeah, I've had it maybe a few times
in my last 20 years, but that's rare.
Okay, anything else, Diane?
Is there anybody here on the Central Coast, or do I need to go to Reno?
That treats Lyme's?
Yeah.
I don't. The only one that I know of is a gentleman up in the Bay Area, and I know it takes like 6 months to see him, but there are other ones. Most of the people who treat Lyme's tend to keep a low profile.
Okay.
If you follow me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and that's sad also.
Okay.
Okay, I hope that helps, Diane. If you have any question, you can always call me off the air.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Lyme disease is a clinical diagnosis. If you have a young person that has weird neurological symptoms that don't make sense, they probably have Lyme's until proven otherwise.
Have you ever heard of anybody who had this sort of a chronic fatigue and was so much better, at least mentally, as far if they were to smoke and the nicotine seemed to help them?
You know, I've heard stories like that, and nicotine can be a tonic, you know, especially the European brands that don't have a lot of chemicals in them. Nicotine can be very useful. And it probably acts as as some type of a cholinergic mechanism to that.
Okay. All right, fine. Well, I really want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope we can get you back on and the root canals and then some of the other things that you do deal with. And so, but I do want to get you, of course, on some of our other programs. As you know, we do three different audiences every day, and so there's no reason why we couldn't talk to them early morning and the afternoon programs on the subject of Lyme disease, because I think it's so important, and I think that there are these clinical entities out there that really are poorly understood and perhaps poorly treated as well. Well, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real good time. And
my pleasure.
I think our listeners have certainly enjoyed it.
My pleasure. You call me anytime. I love to be on your show. God bless your work, sir. May God protect and bless you for doing this kind of work, and
And God bless America.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Dr. Christopher Husser and his offices in Reno. And, of course, we met him this last week. We were back there. In fact, it was the same meeting that the Michael Prutka, the Constitution Party, spoke at. And it was a good time. And about 350 people there, people who are concerned about what's happening in America. I wish there'd been 30,000 people there, because everybody has to be concerned. We're going to lose America if we don't take a stand and get the people educated and understanding we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. I do hope that many of you will want to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. That's The Brotherhood of Darkness, which I think is the best overview of what's going on. We're, of course, at the present time suggesting people get the video. They sold their souls for rock and roll, either the 4 or the 10-hour version, and you'll actually see the rock stars saying that how they sold their souls to the devil. And there really are demonic forces at work within our society, and of course we alluded earlier in the program to the fact that the people within the CIA and the OSS actually helped the Nazis to come to America to continue their bizarre experiments on creating new diseases, on creating a psychological disease, on creating mental illness, and then of course the German scientists were involved in the space program to create the intercontinental ballistic missiles that would allow us to launch missiles that would kill people anywhere in the world. And then, of course, we talk about how the CIA and the OSS actually helped the Nazis, Martin Bormann, Heinrich Mueller, Adolf Eichmann, Klaus Barbie, Dr. Mengele, and thousands of others escaped to South America, where they lived out their lives in comfort with the treasures that they'd stolen and raped from the people of Europe. And that, of course, is covered, at least in partially, in a book called The Medusa File, much more extensively on Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, and, of course, the book The Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. Both of those books are almost impossible to get. We have them, and one of these days we'll have to do book reviews and get you that information. But the book, The Medusa File, which we do carry, is an excellent overview of Operation Paperclip. And the fact that most Americans haven't heard of it until recently with talk radio simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists over what the American people think, and that five major corporations control 95% of the major media in America, and they're going around buying up radio stations as fast as they can because they don't want people to ever hear the truth. So if you believe that there's a problem out there, we hope many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to stay on the air. That's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. Well, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like more information on the book, The Medusa File, that goes into the Operation Paperclip, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and, of course, the other books we talked about here. Why, of course, 1-800-544-8927. Don't forget that video. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 4-hour or the 10-hour version. And I'll tell you what, if at the end of that time you're not convinced that there's a satanic conspiracy, that Satan is alive and well, and operating through every media of communication and entertainment in America, why, well, there's not much hope for you anyway. With that in the thought, remember our meeting here on the 6th of November, and we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.